Deborah, with her 30 years of being an entrepreneur and creating over 7 companies, knows exactly what it means to accept the mission. When you make that decision, when you accept the mission to become a solopreneur, to take yourself and your talents to market, then you embrace a life of not only unlimited possibilities, but also the unknown. It's an elixir of fear and bravery that only someone who's taken the leap really understands. On our show, Deb digs deep with her guests to highlight what you, the listener, wants to know. The stories, the whys, and the hows to navigate the journey to success. Get ready to hear from some of the most incredible mission takers from Generation Z to Boomers. So sit up, perk up, and get ready to be blown away. Now here is your host, Deborah Drummond.
Well, lucky you. If this is the first time you've popped on to Mission Accepted, you'll be like, what do you mean lucky you? I mean lucky me. I am so glad you're back with us. We have an incredible guest for you today. All our guests are so unique, and you got it. You know, this whole show is called Mission Accepted. So we're not the easiest show to come on because we're like, we're going to go for it. We're going to talk about why you took the mission. What were some of the risks, some of the dangers, some of the highs, and honestly, some of the best successes come from talking about what happened when it wasn't going so great. So we're going to talk about all of it today with Mr. Brian Sebastian. I know you know who he is because you follow what we do. And this gentleman, we just had an opportunity to meet him finally in person at the Oscar watching party. He was there at Heather's event. You saw him doing some incredible interviews with myself and also with Ocean. And let me tell you, so this LA guy who travels, that's going to say, Brian Sebastian's from LA plus. And we're hoping to see him in Vancouver on August 9th. But in the 5-second conversation we've just had, he's like, oh, I'm in, you know, North Carolina. I think it's North Carolina. And he's like, oh, hang on. I'm going to go. What are you going to go do? Like board or something in Europe with your buddy there? And I mean, so that's kind of how this guy rolls. But honestly, huge accomplishments. 750 million views on his show. And by the end of summer, his immediate goal is to hit 1 billion. So let's do that. And we're going to let Brian come on. He's going to tell you views on what. I'm going to let him talk about his show and what he does. It's very cool. So Brian, welcome to Mission Accepted, where we have a really good time.
Well, I've accepted the mission, and I always do. And that's the fun part about that, because it's always about helping those women. You know, going back to 2008, I knew that women in fitness and women in the world of dressage, that's how I started it there, and helping women own businesses and things like that. Didn't matter who it was or where, what part of the world it was going to be in. I just knew that was going to be really the more part of kicking off everything. It was the housing bubble in the United States. And I saw what was not being done, what was not being helped publicity wise. And mostly it was women. So if it weren't for women, we would not be where we are today because of women. So I'm in service to the women around the world.
Wow. Look, tell us what the name of your show, so people can hop off this one and hop on to yours. What's the name of your show, Brian?
Well, it's called Movie Reviews and More. When we started it in October of 1993. And all I knew is at that point, it was about video stores still, when video stores used to be around. If you lived in Los Angeles, there was Tower Video, Tower Records, Tower Classic. You had the Roxy, you had the Rainbow. You had every celebrity always going there. People from around the world were coming there because it was the vibe. But I just knew there had to be more to it. So I said, movie reviews and more. I didn't know what the more was going to be. The more is all of this now, as we know. Mm-hmm. But back then in the early 90s, the more was going to always be more important than movie reviews, which is the case. I still talk about movies, but we talk about the toy world. We talk about women. We talk about, you know, you name it, fitness, fashion, the world of entertainment. I still do one-on-one interviews, except being in Los Angeles now. Now we can go anywhere that we want cross-country, whether it's Zoom or StreamYard, and that's what we're doing now.
It's incredible. When you think about, so I was just having that conversation I was sharing with you pre-show with Bada Baraka, who we're going to see on the show, the next two summits, actually. And we were talking about, and I was sharing that with you a little bit pre-show. Let's dive in a little bit today. First of all, I want to, before we go too much further, have a conversation with, when did the microphone go into your hand? What made that microphone go into your hand? What did you do beforehand? So look, you know what? I joke sometimes because I was 15. I lied on my application. Has anyone ever lied on their job application? I mean, you can go look up our social, but I lied and said I was 16 because, you know, the family really needed the money. And I decided to work graveyard shift at Denny's. I was still going to school because graveyard shift, everyone came in from the bar after and they tipped more. And it literally was, it was 85 cents more an hour to work graveyard. And so I always say I went from being a Denny's, you know, a Denny's waitress all the way up to, you know, spending some time with you at the Oscar Lounge and doing what I'm doing. What's your magic to your magic? Where were you at before you started to, you know, this microphone went into your hand?
Well, think about this. I always knew I was going to be a DJ because I used to make my own 8-track tapes. If you remember those 8-track tapes, I made those because I hated buying a tape and it only had one good song on it. I hated that. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, let me just make my tapes. So I started making my own tapes in 1977. Think about that. I was working at the Coast Guard Academy. We were the first civilians. I got paid $750, you know, $7.50. And I think the average wage at that point was $1.92. That's my sophomore year in high school. I got a bunch of my friends to do that. And I worked at the Coast Guard in the mess hall. So the tuxedo was my suit. You know, we worked. I had to be there at, we started at actually 6 a.m, but we had to check in at 4:30 a.m. So I used to go skating all night and listen to music at the roller rink. On the side of that, I was learning how to become a disc jockey. So the mic was kind of going to be there. And I was kind of shy, believe it or not. I still think I'm a little bit shy here and there. But that and the world of drum and bugle corps prepared me for the discipline, because you travel in the world of drum corps in the summers, but you practice all year to put that perfect show together to do all of that stuff. You may take out things, add in things for effect and things like that, but you always rehearse 8 to 12 hours a day in the hot sun in the cornfields of Ohio, Nebraska. You stand at attention for an hour with your equipment on. But it was the funnest thing to do because you learn discipline, consistency, and not to give up. And then working at the Coast Guard Academy, wearing a tuxedo. How many people do you know wore a tuxedo as their uniform in the military? So you learn a lot. And we got paid a lot because we were civilians working for the government. So I never forgot that stuff. And then I knew I wanted to be a DJ. So I didn't have to take mathematics to be a DJ, to go into radio. I just knew I was going to do that. So I just remember a guidance counselor saying, you have to take your general motor classes, because I was taking my communication classes. I go, well, what do I have to do this if I get this? And what happens if I get the job? He goes like this, Deb, don't worry about it. You're not going to get the job. Well, he was wrong. I ended up getting the job because I happened to take those courses. And I ended up working for a Merv Griffin station called WPOP, News Radio 14 in Connecticut, the only news station. So guess who else was in Connecticut? Gail King. She was on Channel 7. Now, we had never met, but we would talk on the phone because we had reel-to-reels at that point, recording politicians. So Joseph Lieberman, Christopher Dodge, they were my senators who went on to do big things. Joe Lieberman ran for vice president with John McCain. Christopher Dodge ended up being the president of the MPAA in Los Angeles, the Motion Picture Association of America. You can't make these things up. And by the time I finally met Gail King, it was when the OWN network started. So I think it was 2012 where I met Gail King with Oprah at that time. And then we became friends.
Wow. I just want to say a mouthful. Like, there's so much in there. But, and you know what? I have been falling in love with and really kind of always have with the word unforeseen. Like, unforeseen. Like, you're standing there in a uniform, you're drumming, you're doing your thing. But you were kind enough to share with us some pretty good nuggets about what you learned, like consistency and discipline and, you know, doing what you needed to do and not listening to someone. I don't know how many guidance counselors or friends, you hear it, I hear it all the time, who you're hanging out with. If you have a dream, make sure you're really careful who you tell, because one guidance counselor or one neighbor or one friend can go, are you sure? And that's all it takes to play on that little piece of self-doubt that grows and then puts that dream to rest.
Well, think about this. I had two guidance counselors who didn't tell me the right guidance. That's their job to give you the right guidance. And I said, well, how can one person give 380 people the right guidance? That doesn't seem possible if you're thinking about it the other way around. I went to an all-white high school in Connecticut. My graduating class was 325. A lot of us are still pretty tight because I was the only black guy. I happened to be the black DJ there. And I said, my God, if we're going to have soft hops, I better be the DJ. That would be kind of strange. that's how I looked at it, Deb. But also, I introduced them to Rapper's Delight in 1979. That's the first time the kids heard rapping. Wow. So I'm playing Rapper's Delight with Richard Pryor. I'm playing, you know, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Kansas, Foreigner, all that stuff. I'm learning all the music and incorporating all the stuff that I knew I was going to have to know because my friends did that. I was a ticket scalper in the early 80s. This is all before I get to college. I was a black ticket scalper, the only black guy there, scalping for white rock concerts. I had tickets to everything. Till this day, I've never seen The Who, but I was scalping tickets for $150, and I couldn't. At that point, we had rotary phones. I couldn't get a hold of anybody, and I was pissed because I'm like, I had my one friend who was a Who fan. I couldn't reach him the entire weekend. And I said, I threw the tickets at him and said, you just blew it. And I blew it. I could have gone to see The Who. I've never seen The Who since.
Well, I don't want to break your heart, but you're talking to a music person who's seen a lot of people, including your friends. And it's so funny as you start to list off music, I'm like, you know, Prism played for my daughter's Sweet 16 because, you know, I made a couple of calls. And the day that people used to sleep overnight, thank God I knew people because they would sleep overnight to get tickets, right? Or I would pay them to get my ticket because I was, you know, bartending and managing the clubs and working. And I'm like, go get my tickets for me. They're like, okay. And I'm like, I'll get you in the club. And they're like, okay. So, but people used to sleep overnight to get tickets. And me and
had people, Deb, who waited in line. We paid them to wait in line for days. They would be there 3 or 4 days in advance. And so that's how we got the best tickets.
Oh, man. Look at us go. Okay, so let's bring it to here. Let's bring it to now because there is things that we do that work. There's things that we do that don't work. There's things that you have to overcome and all of the things. And I would imagine, I'm just going to kind of, you know, jump in here and imagine and correct me if I'm wrong, but the kid who's sitting there going, I'm going to be a DJ and the guidance counselor is like, well, you might want to take mathematics. I'm sure you could not have imagined your life right now. You could have wanted it. Needed it, aspired to it. You could have maybe not seen how it was going to all come together. Sometimes that has been certainly true for me. Who knew I would meet this person or have this experience or be doing what I'm doing right now? Or I don't know, it wasn't too long ago, like maybe less than 6 weeks ago, I'm standing in my bathroom getting ready in the morning and I'm standing there. I'm like, did I end up with the women's channel? How did I'm launching a television channel. And of course my goblins were going for it. They're like, who needs a women's channel? I'm like, we do, you know, these little goblins on my head. And I'm like, what, where, how did this happen? Do you know what I mean? Like I came from a house of not have, you know, we had wieners and beans on Saturday. Most of the time there wasn't any money for the wieners. I mean, I really, you know, this aspiring process that I've gone through. And then it's interesting, two things that you said. One is that I see that you continue to grow and aspire, right? The second thing was that you said that you might be a little shy. And it's interesting that you say that because I also live behind a mic. And for me, I consider myself a little shy too. I think it's the part of me that has to go back in, be internal and rejuvenate and restore. And I go kind of internal. I don't know if that's the story for you, but here we are living our life, doing some cool things, still working. I don't know about you, but I don't say, you know, I'm working hard every day. I'm like, I'm doing it. I'm stretching to significance is what I call it. But what keeps,
I like that.
Yeah, it is a stretch. You know what? Okay. There's my new thing. Can I tell you something? Because, and to no insult that anyone's ever used this word, because I was on a book launch yesterday that I was in actually in about 12 out of 14 people use this word. And I've decided to change it because they're like, you know, my work's been a journey. My life's been a journey. And I'm like, I don't know about you, but a journey is from one pub to another pub in Ireland to get a nice cold beer. This has been a stretch to significance. That's what this has been. This is not a journey. This is not a wander through the park, but being here, some people would say, like, isn't this, aren't you happy where you're at? And I am, but what is it like to be living your dream, but still have dreams? And at this place, what do you do to have that happen? Is it easier? Is it harder? Do you have to talk to different people? Like, what is that like for you?
For me, the hard part is over with. The hard part was going back to 2018, creating things, knowing that we were going to have a pandemic coming up. How do you tell people you can see something, the world's going to be shut down? You can't tell them. So what you do, we had about a year and a couple months to prepare for what we knew was going to happen. So I always say it was February 2nd, 2020, that it happened, while I was in Miami, while I was going to be at the Super Bowl. I flew out that town. When I see the water rising up and I see a beautiful woman walking with those red bottom high heel shoes in the middle of, I think, ankle deep, and I'm like, she's got great, beautiful pantyhose on. Those are expensive shoes. Is she going to take the shoes off? I watched the water rise in the middle of the parking lot, and I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. And there was nobody around to see it. I didn't record it because I knew people wouldn't believe me, but I was surprised to see it. That told me something at that point. The world is about to change. February 25th is when I really go into lockdown. I had just interviewed Sergio Mendes, who brought Brazilian music over to the U.S. from Brazil with Herb Albert. It was his movie called In the Key of Joy coming out at the Grammy Museum in downtown L.A. As soon as we walked out at 10 after 9, they called the NBA season. The Lakers were about to get out. Kobe Bryant was still playing at that point. NHL and Major League Baseball, I got on my mega bus with my rollaway Segway that I had that was AI technology, went on the mega bus, and I did my knockdown for 9 months by myself in Vegas. My job at that point was to inspire people to keep them going because they weren't prepared for all of this stuff. I was. And that's when we did 110 interviews on Zoom 2020 and 2021. I said, I'm never going to do this many Zoom interviews ever again. That was just that. But when you go back, when I was running the Hollywood Film Festival, the first woman, Shay Vaughn, Vince Vaughn's mom, had the Women's Broadcasting Channel. So we were the only male on that. So again, thank you for you women. That's now it's called the Worldwide TV Network, but it was called the Women's Broadcast TV Channel at that point.
So what do you do now, Brian? Now, what do you do now? Because you have aspirations, you have things, you're growing, you're going to go from 750 million to a billion. What are the conversations you're having with yourself now? The hard part you just shared is over. How do you keep yourself going? How do you, is it different than what you did, you know, 5 years ago to where you are? Maybe it's the same for you. What's it like now going for that next step?
Everything's different for everybody. Nobody's doing what they did 3 years ago. Nobody's doing what they did 5 years ago. If you're not able to adapt and adjust, you're not going to make it. When everything was during lockdown, that was the time for everybody to reset. Some people are like, oh, I don't know what I wanted. Well, you better figure it out. This is the perfect time to do it. And those other people, that's when a lot of people left the job market. They said, I don't want to work at a restaurant. I don't want to work at a car dealership anymore. Maybe I want to start trading stocks, which is what a lot of them did. And when they got the government money, they all went out and bought Teslas, new cars and stuff, but they still weren't planning for how do you maintain it. Yeah. So what you have to do and what we do is our job is to showcase and help those brands get out there, stay afloat, because what's happening around in the world is whether, you know, people believe in tariffs or they're not going to be in tariffs. Small mom and pop companies are still affected by what's going on. Our job for Movie Reviews and More and Dreamweaver Arts and the Dreamweaver Artist Ranch is to help those companies, having them come on our show, inviting them to the things that we go to, introducing them to the right people, and showcasing them and bringing them in on the more part. That's what Movie Reviews and More was all about. But I didn't know that back in 1993. Now I do know that.
You nailed it when you said that. I mean, things change and they change quickly. When I was sharing about me having this magical moment in the bathroom, seems to be whenever I meditate, for some reason it happens. When I'm getting ready in the morning, I get my answers. But when I'm standing there and I think about not only I don't know about you, but it does sound, it leans into, I don't want to say that there's, I feel a responsibility, but I definitely feel a sense of responsibility to help the wave. And you talked about it. So look, I've been an entrepreneur for 33 years. We've definitely seen changes. I mean, we would have seen changes if there had not been any world concerns or high level world concerns. There's changes in technology, but we hit a massive wave. And like you said, a lot of people stepped into the world of entrepreneurship, or they were already doing this on the side and they were forced to or needed to go into doing it full game. And so, what I have learned, particularly, I mean, during that time, it was about 3 years where I got a very clear message that I needed to learn about media prior to that. Was it why? I don't know. I woke up and I got told I needed to start a podcast. No one knew what one was. Rogan wasn't even around. You know what I mean? Like we didn't, no one really even knew what that was. And so I took that as a strong indication and went into play with it. And the teaching, I'm sure you must go through that. It's like when you say introducing people to the right people, that's what we do. And the education that I think that has had to be the backstory. So starting businesses, becoming an entrepreneur, deciding to do it on your own. And then it's you go out there and you live your dream of unforeseen. You make some mistakes. You don't really understand branding, but you try it. You don't understand marketing so much, but you try it. You go on to maybe a podcast and you blow it. You go into this one, you're a little better. You don't know how to put things together. I mean, for us, it's a lot of teaching people how to really utilize media. For you, you're in such an exposure base. And like you said, connecting people to the right people. But there is a big learning curve, right? Like there's quite a curve that happens from I need to be my own boss to I want to be my own boss to I really need to make money. Like I always call it having more money left than the month, you know, than at the end of the month. And there's like a real, I don't know, a polarity that goes with that. That's part of why I continue to do what I do because I still see people struggle in the area of my expertise. But it is different, you know. It's like for me sometimes, I mean I'm a, you know, my YouTube has my algorithms down pat. I'll wake up in the morning. I know the music I like for the morning because I'm a music hound. And I know the information I like to hear. And I know when I'm ready to have new information because I'm listening to the people that I used to listen to, thought leaders, and I don't get bored, but I'm like, we heard that. Yeah, that was me 2 years ago. I'm good. And for me, it's an indicator that I need to hear from different people. I need to tap into different levels of education. What about you? What keeps you internally fueled? Like, what do you do? Like, for me, it's music, it's thought leaders, it's meditating.
Well, it's all of that. I've been practicing Buddhism since March 16th of 1989. You think of Patrick Duffy from Dallas. You think of Herbie Hancock, jazz. You think of Tina Turner. I was in that entertainment district where we all chanted, you know, Nam-myoho-renge-kyo. So for me, it was vibration. And then you put the world of drum and bugle corps, and you take where I told you earlier about working at the Coast Guard Academy, and your suit is a tuxedo. I learned I'm a clean black guy. So when I go to my friends' places, I automatically start cleaning up the places. I want my friends to have energy flow. So if something's out of place, I'm like, no wonder you're not making money. You got clothes all the ground, and my female friends, they walk out the shower, the towels are dropped all over the place. No, you got to pick all this stuff up. You got to have energy flow if you want money to come in. All of these shows did. Affirmations are really, really powerful. You'll see me riding on my scooter, walking down the street, driving in a car. I'll be looking at science and practicing voiceovers, word associations, and things like that. I was accused of talking too proper from black females. Why do you talk so proper? Are you gay? Are you a cop? And then at the flip side of that, I had publicists saying, you're not a black outlet, so we can't invite you to black things over there. So I would never go to that. So I said, oh, okay, I guess I won't interview Martin Lawrence. So I'll just interview Sean Connery instead. I'll take that one. So you learn what they told you you're not supposed to do, wanting to define you. And at the middle, you meet in the middle, you're like, no one's going to define me. No one's going to tell me what to do. I know myself pretty well. I did it by myself. I did it without a book, without a website, and then without being famous. I am not famous. Never wanted to be, because I started behind the microphone in traditional radio. Mm-hmm. So I saw what traditional radio wasn't doing. Think of Howard Stern. He left CBS. He went to Sirius XM. Yeah. He works out of his house. What does Joe Rogan do? He works out of his house, you know, in Austin, Texas. So what I wanted to do is be in the middle of that, because I watched what Oprah did when she left Chicago and started OWN. She lives in Montecito. She mm-hmm. did her 20, 25 years in Chicago. She doesn't have to do it anymore. So I said, that's what I want to do. So interviewing all of these people and becoming friends with them, you learn a lot by their mistakes that they made. You don't have to make that same mistake if you're paying attention. And I always say this, that when you learn to listen, you listen to learn.
Ooh, I like that, but what I like is what you said, and you said it with adamancy. It's like, pay attention, pay attention. I think that's really powerful. I mean, it sounds so simple, but honestly, there's things that are happening. For me, I like to look at the details. Sometimes I'll have conversations, like we'll be examining something that's going on, or we've had great success, and I'm like, what didn't work? Like, what Absolutely. Didn't work, right? What didn't work that we didn't see? Sometimes when things are so successful, was there one area? Was there one area? For example, this event that we're going to be doing in August 9th. And a friend of mine said, how many volunteers? And I'm like, 20. She's like, are you out of your mind? And I'm like, 20 volunteers. Easy. Look, I know that we're going to wrap up soon. And I love to ask two questions. One of them, we're going to be here for a while. But you've shared a lot of really, really incredible things. Lots of drops and turnings about how you went from one area to your life to another area in your life. Living your life in a way that obviously is very fulfilling. What was one of the most riskiest, like we kind of call it Dino, what was one of the most riskiest things that you felt that you did, that you needed to do for your for your life, for your career, for your success? What took a lot of all in?
I never worked for a corporate company because I knew they wouldn't make the changes. And I knew a lot of things by watching the major companies, you know, because think about this. My job was to interview celebrities, you know, so I'm not talking to a Tom Hanks or a Rita Wilson or Tom Cruise and, you know, a John Travolta. I'm seeing them because each time they had a movie or a TV show or a book come out, I became friends with them. I got to know them more. Remember, my job was to interview them and help promote them. Right. So my job is still to do that. It's just being done a different way. Now everybody has a podcast. Most syndications don't get the numbers that the average podcast person gets now. You know, even Howard Stern saw that when he left CBS. So when I'm at events, I'm seeing what they're doing wrong that I can do better. Oh, why didn't they do it this way? Why didn't they take this? Why did they invite so-and-so? I would call someone and say, did you know about this event? Next time, come with me because I'm on their list. You should be here. So I didn't have competition. It was always about sharing. There's no jealousy because I knew what it was like to be the small person on the totem pole. The only thing I knew, Deb, two things. No one was going to outwatch me when I was watching movies, and no one was going to outlast me because I knew I could outlast them. While everybody was at the beach, I'm in a movie theater watching movies. While everybody's going skiing or whatever in the winter, I'm at the Four Seasons in Beverly Hills with the Beverly Hilton interviewing celebrity one-on-one. You can't do that stuff anymore because the world has changed and there's more mental health problems. So a lot of those people who have a lot of the money don't want to be around the average person anymore. Think about that. So what do? You have the haves and you have the have-nots. There is no middle anymore.
Wow. There's a lot to be said there, my friend. Brian, I'm so glad and so grateful to have some time with you on my own. And we chuckled about that a little bit about pre-show because we do group shows. We're on. We do this. We see each other at events. It's so nice just to have a really beautiful conversation with you. So I'm going to end with this. We're going to shift everything a little bit. And this might be difficult. People find it the hardest question that I ask, but I'm going to ask it. So you like to travel. You're on your way to a desert island. And honey, this is the desert island that you are deciding not to come back from. It's you and you and a suitcase. And you've got room in that suitcase for one album. What could you not imagine never being able to listen to forever? What one are you taking with you?
First of all, I'm not taking one. I'm taking two because that's just me. That's just me. I'm smart enough to know these things. And I don't need to go to an island to know that I need to be a survivor. I'm a survivor and I don't have to go to an island to prove it. But if I did go, I'm taking Van Halen. You know, ain't talking about love.
Oh, my God. Because
I can play it over and over and over. That's my go-to. That's my number one song. My second one is Kiss, Let Me Go Rock and Roll. Not Rock and Roll All Night. Let Me Go Rock and Roll. And Gene Simmons to the family knows that because I told them.
Wow. That's incredible.
You didn't expect that from a black guy, did you?
I did not expect Van Halen from you. I did not expect Van Halen from you. Kiss in grade seven, I was Paul Stanley, did the whole makeup, and we did the air band thing.
Chris as the drummer because all of us drummers playing harder.
Oh, my gosh. I did not expect Van Halen. And you know what? I'm telling you, we've done a lot of shows. I mean, and I asked that question to a lot of people, and you're our first Van Halen. Interestingly enough, I mean, we've had some pretty crazy stuff. That's very cool, my friend.
Well, look, one day I'll tell you a crazy interview what I did with Eddie and David.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't mind extending the show. Is it an off-camera conversation?
No, I have no problem telling it. I have no issues.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's wrap the show up with a little Eddie.
Okay, so you know, Ed, you know, he'd like to be called Ed.
Yep.
He liked blondes. He would love you, not brunettes. He ended up marrying a brunette. Both two brunettes. But there was we were at a sex club, a private party of my friend. Eddie's in the corner with his ukulele, with a bottle of Jack Daniels, smoking when he has throat cancer, which he's not supposed to be. He had his Red Viper outside, and women were coming up topless thinking, is that really Eddie Van Halen? I'm like, who do you think it is? He's playing in the corner. Of course it's Ed. Can we take a picture? And Ed comes up. Yeah, you can take a picture. So there's two naked pictures with Ed. I don't know who the blonde women were, but that was that. And then Ed, come on, you got to stop drinking. You got to stop smoking because I want you to live. You know, ain't talking about love. It's my favorite song. And he goes, Brian, you haven't seen anything yet. I'm going to do one better. I'm like, I don't think so. He didn't. I told them, but that's where it was.
Oh, my gosh. That is an excellent way to end the show. Mission accepted, 007, living on the edge. Thank you so much, Brian. And look, audience, you are incredible. You are fans of us, but we are fans of you. Because both Brian and I know in our world, if we're not saying it right, you're not sharing it right. Because that's what I love about you. You are so attentive. You appreciate our guests. We appreciate you. Thank you so much. If you want to be sitting where Brian's sitting one day, you know what to do. This is not difficult. I am not hard to find. My website is literally my name. You can just go hit that contact button and we will have you on the show. Brian, thank you so much for being on Mission Accepted. As always, my friend, we will see you soon. We'll be together. We'll chat. And until we meet again, everyone, you be well and you stay groovy. Bye for now.